Accession number 16729, William Ridley, reel 15.
Ridley, reel 15. You'd arrived at your camp up in the Kurdistan, as you said, Mr. Ridley, and the conditions were particularly unpleasant. How bad did they get?
Well, it was in the first place we were still in, and we weren't in, had any extra clothing, and our tent. There was by this time our strength had. We had accommodated the snipers had joined us again, and there was eight of us in a tent made for six, and with it being a Indian command, the tents was just cotton, and by this time that we were. It was snowing and what have you, and it was absolutely freezing cold, and there was no heat or anything like that. So eventually, we got an issue of charcoal, because you couldn't. We could get a bit of petrol light and put it into the tins, and but you couldn't take it inside the tent light, you know. So we got issued with charcoal. Well, we didn't know how to work charcoal, but we couldn't get it to light, and when we did get it to light, it was just smoke and smoke. And I remember once I had to go somewhere. I was on guard or somewhere like that. I'm not sure, but I come back after my stint where. And I goes into the tent, and they had the charcoal thing in the tent, all sitting around with their gas mask, so trying to keep warm. And we used to entertain ourselves was really, I mean, sitting in the tent for hours and hours on end, you know. And this time there was, I think it was, as I say, there was eight. I think there was eight of us in a tent, or nine of us or something, in a tent that was made for six, like, you know. And we all had three blankets each, you know. So we decided that to keep ourselves warm, we would make a communal bed. So if you say seven blokes and they had three blankets each, that was 21 blankets, right? So we put a layer of blankets on the deck, and then we put the remainder on the top, which was a hell of a weight when you but to get it was a communal bed. It was only tried once, I must emphasize, and one got in one end and one got in the other end. All facing the same way, and then the other one went in knees under his knees, into his bottom, and then the next one into his bottom, and the same happened at this side. And then there was one space left for the bloke to get in the middle. And you never seen such a carry on. There was seven, eight lads lying, all facing the one way. They couldn't turn, they couldn't move. And if anybody wanted to go into the toilet, it was just too badly, you know. It was unbelievable. And there was a Cockney lad there, Jess Martin. I can't stand this. I've got to get up. And you get your bloody self up. Shut up. And he got up and he took his three blankets up the top and went and lay along the feet of us. But that was a total failure. We couldn't do anything like that.
But you sleep in your clothes?
But probably, I can't remember that. Like, I would say yes, probably yes. But one beautiful story I must tell you about then. We had Christmas Day up there. And again, it was really rough weather, you know. It was always snowing and rain, bleaching, because we were pretty high up, like, you know. And of course, from out of the darkness came with two marquee tents for Christmas. So they put the marquee tents up, like, you know, and have your Christmas dinner in the marquee tents. But that was the only allowance they give you, like, you know, you had to wear in the tent. And you went for your Christmas dinner. And give the army its due. They always try to give you something different for Christmas. Anyway, we got chicken this time. And you went with your two horse and Dixies. And you also got a tot of rum. Now, like all these brilliant quartermasters, they decided to put the rum in the tea, which spoils the rum and it spoils the tea, and it does not for anybody. Because it ends up that by the time you get there, the tea's cold, and it was horrible, like, you know. So anyway, we gets into the thing, and we gets the rum ration and the tea and this Dixie, and we got our vegetables and our chicken, heart of chicken leg or something like that, and Brussels sprouts and tatties or whatever it was. Now, there was also a Christmas pudding with custard. So what do you do with it? I had to go in with the chicken and the. So you had chicken, roast potatoes, stuffing, Christmas pudding, and custard all in that tin, you know. And you got your Dixie was your thing in there anyway. It went down like, I mean, it was a bit, but it was warm and whatever. But that night, again, you've got to realise that. At night time, it's, what's the word, styrene, pitch black, you know. No, you can't, there's nothing you can see, your hand in front of you. No stars, nothing. And the bugle went, cookhouse, it was pitch black. Must have been, you know, pretty late on. And cookhouse, what's on cookhouse? Rum ration. Well, you know, and it was chucking it down, run rushing, gets down, and of course again it was in the tea, right? Now there was a reason for that, because 9 times out of 10 somebody had been supping the rum, and to make it last out they put it in the tea, like, sort of thing. And at least that was the theory, you know, drank the rum. And anyway, that's another story I could tell you. And we're waiting as usual in the line, waiting for the get served, like, you know, and the thing. And I was starving of hunger, and I was down in the Dixies in the cookhouse, like, you know, and I'm feeling pitch black, and I was feeling around in the Dixies, like, you know. Empty Dixies, and it still hadn't been washed out, like, you know, or been Christmas, like. And I put this up. I couldn't believe me. Couldn't believe what I was holding. A chicken. A full chicken. And I says to Bob, I says, Bob, what? I says, I found a chicken in the Dixie. Get it, get out of it. So I gets the chicken. And I sticks it in me blouse, like, you know. Gets me to... And I would take the chicken. I said, do you want a bite of chicken? But Bob, a bite of chicken, you know. And gets into the tent, like, you know. And hey, do you know what's happened? What? Marky's found a chicken. Whoa, great. I want a bit of chicken. And then the sergeant was bulleting with him, sergeant. Yeah. Chess! He says, are you farted? No, sergeant. Who's got the bloody boots off? Not me, Sergeant. Oh, that's a bloody smell. Somebody's doing it. What's going on? Not me, Sergeant. I didn't know, not me. And that, I takes the bait, that bait the chicken. And it was a chicken, and it hadn't been gutted. Well, I don't know how many were poorly that next day, but it didn't get any effect on me, you may not understand it. But the chicken was stinking. I think it still got out, like, they took the outside, like, you know.
Did you dig the tents into the ground?
No,
and
no.
Hold them in?
No, no. I can tell you a story about that as well. There was a lad there called Mike Kelly, and he was a brilliant lad. He had wonderful hands, you know, he could sketch. That was how he was in the section, like, you know, because he could make the maps and that, like. Actually, he was a commercial artist, and he was just like old Bill, you know, old Bill with a big cash, you know. He used to walk, not a smart note, you know, not shoulder button. He's a real old man. He was 26 or something like that. I mean, it was old doors, like, you know. And he was a lovely bloke, you know. If you told him the day out, he would do it, like, you know, no arguing about it, you know, smashing that he would. And we're sitting in the tent this time, and eventually we found it. We're sitting knee to knee, you know. The tent had shrunk, and we said, Mike, get outside and see what's happening in this tent. And of course, it started to snow. And of course, as I said, it was just a cotton tent, you see. And of course, all the snow had come on the top of the tent. And of course, it built up, and it was coming so what they send Michael for to clean the tent up. And he made a mess of it as well, like, but it was disastrous up there. It was terrible up there.
Other than Christmas, what was your food like?
It was not bad. It was, I mean, by this time we'd eat anything. I mean, there was no way you wouldn't make complaints about the food. I mean, it was a waste of time, like, you know. One beautiful story was, I might have told you this one before, but it was the same place, and it used to have, the ground used to open with the weather, you know, and it used to open, like, you know, crevices used to come in the ground, like, you know. And this day, they used to have the cookhouse, and they used to have like a tent thing over the top of the cookhouse, like, you know, like, and they had these blowers, you know, the petrol blowers, and that had them undercover, and you had to come up to the up to that part and walk past, and used to slop your meal in your Dixie, whatever it was, you know, and you'd fill your cup with them, and used to slop it in. And this day we went, it had been chucking it down through the night, like, and there was a great big pool of water in front of the cookhouse, like, you know. What were the lads walking on it, you know, and what have you, and there was a great big, and the lads wouldn't gone in the water, because when you got your feet wet, I mean, that was it, you never got it dried, you know. And this sergeant come along, and he come, because we used to have the two Dixies, like, you know, and he come along, and he says, what's the matter with you, all that sort of thing? And he said, oh man, he said, well, can I go in there, sergeant? He said, bloody soldiers, he says, soldiers, you're frightened of a drop of water. And he went in, he ends up to his waist. He was standing up to his waist in water, because the ground had opened, you see, and he was standing facing the cuckoos like this, like with his two Dixies, and the water was running his waist just below his ear. And the cook gets his fills his Dixies. He's standing like that with his Dixies, and he just filled the two sides of the Dixies with his grub, like, yeah. And I don't know, it was, of course, it was hilarious. I mean, it was, I don't know what happened only. I thought that was great, that one.
Did mail come? Were you getting mail?
Yeah, we had started to get mail. We had some in Cyprus and started to come through. But a lot of it was unhappy, like, some of it was happy, like, my friend lost his girlfriend, like, you know, and of course, I was saying to him, like, I had known that she'd been with somebody else, like, you know, and I had known, but I didn't have enough to tell him, but I had to tell him at the finish, like, because by the time she hadn't wrote them, well, by the time, because I came after Bob was on the advance party, you see, and he had been out a month before me.
What was his other name? Bob
Redshaw, and he was me mate in civvy speed as well, like, you know, we joined up together, and I knew Jean, my wife, had seen his girlfriend out with a sailor, you see, and of course Jean had told me, like, you know, and but I didn't tell Bob, because I thought maybe just one of them odd things, like, and, but she didn't write to him, and I was saying, oh man, but by the time I started to get letters, and of course he cared for her a great deal, like, you know, and I started to get letters, and then he was getting to such a bad state that I had to tell him, like, you know, that what had happened, I says, she's no good for you, Bob, like, you know, so she's away with somebody else. And when I did come back, I knew where she worked, and I went to her, and I laced the floor with her. I told her no uncertain how he put that lad through, you know, because he idolised her, you know, and he got Roger'd, like, and she was the same nurse with Jean joined up. And she joined up the same time as this girl, like, and when she got to where they were going in Gloucester, she reneged and come home. Jean done more time than me.
She was getting news like this was obviously a devastating effect.
I mean, you had no idea what it done to her, you know what I mean? He moped, and I mean, he really idolized her, you know. I mean, it was really, I mean, there was nobody like her, like, you know. We both got a girl, my name's on, but oh, he got done at the same time as me. He had Nancy on, and I had Jean on. Fortunately, I married Jean.
Did you get any, probably very occasional, but did you get any supplies of beer or anything like that too?
Christmas, we got. I think there was an issue. Nothing. Can't remember being. We got with cigarettes. There was always a cigarette issue.
There was any parcels coming through with your mail?
Oh, there was. I mean, I can't. The only parcels I can remember getting was in the desert. And there is another story.
The problem of keeping clean, how did you do it? Because it must have been very difficult to keep dry and clean.
Oh, well, I mean, you just washed in the Dixie, you know, like, as I say, they had the petrol cans, and we used them as, you know, like...
Did you have an ablutions tent, or...?
There was, in Iraq, most of the times there was... I can't remember in Iraq.
Presumably the toilets would be...
Oh, you dug it on. There was proper... they always dug them, like...
The urinal type.
You know, they always dug them. The progressed. By the time we got to the desert, a latrine that they dug a pit about the size of this room, and they put two petrol cans in the pit, you know, and they had a seat like this, what used to happen was they had this seat, and of course, with use, they used to all get full of flies. So there was no chance but flies, I'm talking about the desert now. And what used to happen? They put a lid on. Well, you're supposed to pull the lid down after you'd finished, And of course, in paint, that was the time they didn't. So what they'd done was the seat was a makeshift piece of wood that fitted over the top of the can, the petrol can, wouldn't have walled without the petrol can. And they got a piece of tyre from an old tyre truck, and they hammered it onto the side. And it went onto the lid, and the lid rested on your back. This is when you were able to do this sort of thing, And it rested on your back, and when you got up, you should go, bong, down like that, And then when you went back to it, and what used to happen before they'd done that, you used to lift the lid up and sit on it, and the flag would. The flies used to come up masses of them, Never mind, that was in the desert.
So it must have been very boring out there in Iraq. You see, you're miles from anywhere.
You made your own. You made some stories and jokes and. Remember when we done this, remember when we done that. We used to sit for hours and talk. We used to all smoke pipes at the time. At least I used to smoke a pipe, and most of the lads, one or two of the lads used to smoke pipes. We used to sit and smoke and talk and tell stories and reminisce of what happened when what used to do. I can't remember. Have I been bored? I don't think I've been bored in my life. All the time, I've never been bored. I've always been able to. I think probably this is with the fact that I was the only one. I've always been able to do something,
Did you do any training on the hills?
No, it's all work, walking and making. Root marches and all that sort of thing.
What were you digging and building?
Mostly trenches and what have you, fortifications, and also pillboxes. There was pillboxes, and there used to, where we dug on the top of the hills, there was a pillbox made, probably they'll be still there yet. Probably there'll be families living in them now,
Were these concreted?
Aye, yeah. I think the REs used to do the concrete We used to just do the donkey work, the theory about the Durhams. They could dig a trench faster than anybody else could dig them, And that was what more or less what was happening.
What little leisure did you have? How did you entertain yourself? You've mentioned about talking.
Well, when it got dark, there was not much anybody to do, When it got dark, pretty soon. But there was nothing to do. There was no, you went, as I say, you were on the top of a mountain, And we did get a day's leave in Mosul. We did get a day's leave, and I got my photograph taken because with my stripe on, first photograph of flying around somewhere. They took us to Mosul, and that was the first time I had a chance to talk to. To the Gurkhas, and the lads, of course, and the pop, and gone to the brothels and things like that, not my cup of tea. I didn't even drink in them days. And the Gurkhas was there, I went up to one of them, asked him for his flock and have a look at his cookery. And saw me on like that. Just touched us with the kukri. Took his kukri and touched us. And drew blood, like, you know. I was like, really? I just touched it. And he had to, I smashed like the blokes. Smashed the lovely blokes. I wouldn't like to meet them in the dark, like, with us. But they used to get on great with a lot. I mean, we used to.
You didn't get involved in hunting local game?
No.
What? It was
no.
In the hills.
No. In fact, I can't remember. The only thing I saw in that sort of thing was, I'll tell you what did happen there, and just shows you how clever these guys are. I think this was when we were at Kirkuk. They were sending patrols out from Kirkuk, and they lost there was a 1500 weight truck with the brigade intelligence officer and a battalion and a brigade sergeant, I think it was, and it disappeared. Never seen it from that day to this. And they decided to send them out in twos, like, you know, two 1500 weight trucks. And we got this, we were in the back of the 1500, the second truck, like, you know, and the battalion sergeant, the intelligence sergeant, I think it was Jody Richley at the time, big Jody Richley, he was in the truck with the either the brigade or the, I think it was the brigade sort of thing, and they were surveying what we were doing was surveying the roads for you know, to bring the troops, if the troops had to come up, because the roads were, there weren't tarmac or anything like that. They were like oil based. They were like, you know, like compressed mud mixed with oil, you know, and it gave like a tarmac. It was all right as long as it wasn't raining, like, you know, once the rains come. But these trucks was disappeared, one of them anyway. And this time they decided that they would put an escort in with them. So they put an escort, and I was in one of the escorts, there was three of them. And it was just like when the gangsters, you know, when the car stopped, you had to jump out. They issued with Tommy guns, and spread out at this side, like, you know. And of course it was all hills, and, you know, there was no huts or sure anything. It was all desolate. And this time when the truck got a puncture, of course it stopped there. Right out, and I jumped up, I climbed up onto this hill, like, you know, and I'm lying with a Tommy gun, mate, and the lad the other side. And it must have been, must have took him at least a half an hour or so for to change the wheel and whatever, like, you know. And they're calling us in, and I turned round to come in. Yeah, was an Iraqi tribesman sitting about 30 or 40 yards away from us. I hadn't seen him. And he had a brand new Mauser across his, brand new Mauser, bandoliers across his thing. Every one of his rounds was burnished. They were all polished. And he could have had me a dozen times. I'd never seen him. He was just sitting with the thing that was rifle, a brand new Mauser, German Mauser. That was, I'd forgot about that, and it come to me there, it was out of context with what we were talking about, like.
So you were involved in the kind of thing you had been doing, sketching in the area and stuff?
Yeah, we were making maps and surveying, like, when you say surveying, I don't mean like surveying with a theodolite, but, you know, like choosing positions and plotting roads, which best way to go and best way not to go, this sort of thing. We'd done a bit of everything, you know. I mean, mostly was marching soldiers and taking guard, being on guard and all this sort of thing, like, you know.